Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 707. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We have some great symbolism for you today. We are getting ready to break down the NCAA Hoops Tournament for 2016. You, of course, want to have winning combinations when you fill out your bracket. You want to have all of that going for you. We have a winning combination here today. We are bringing back two fellas with me who have been on previously to break down the bracket. We have on the phone lines first fellow, original FDH Lounge dignitary and FDH Director of Research, Nate Noy. Nate, good to have you on as always, my friend. How you doing?
Doing great, Rick. Ready to talk about this tournament, break down these brackets, and as always, this time of year is extremely exciting for us. So ready to go.
It definitely is a great time of year. We also have on the phone lines another in our circle of FDH Legal Eagles, good friend, longtime FDH Lounge dignitary Steve Callis, coming back on to break down the tournament as well. Of course, you can catch him with his regular show on the STN.net, also featured regularly on such fine outlets as WFAN in New York and SNY. Steve Callis, good to have you back on, my man. How are you today?
Very well. Great to be with you and Nate Noy, as always. Looking forward to it.
This is going to be a very interesting one to break down with you fellas. As they were going through Sunday night, putting the announcement out there in the new expanded two-hour format, which was very interesting, and of course led to the bracket getting leaked about halfway through, hitting the internet. They had depressed ratings from the entire affair. I guess we should start there before we even get into this. Nate, this is something you and I had talked about off air. We were a little bit cynical on the notion that it would affect the network in any kind of a way, the very critical hailstorm that they got vis-a-vis how boring it was to have to sit through everything, this prolonged, extended money grab that they were doing. But with the ratings going down like they did, you start to wonder if they might start to feel it at some point. So what's your sense on that, just based on what we know thus far? It's kind of a blind guess for any of us. But, Nate, what do you think about that as far as whether we might see another two-hour one next year or maybe even a partial scale back to an hour and a half?
I think they'll probably scale back to an hour. I think it'll all come down to the conversation that they have with the advertisers. And, obviously, if the advertisers are seeing that the numbers drop dramatically in the second half of that show because of the leak, they're going to be really looking into it. There'll be an actual investigation. A lot of people – they paid for X eyeballs, they didn't get X eyeballs, and I don't know what those contracts look like, but there may be some stipulations to where CBS is actually cutting a check to some of those advertisers. So I would anticipate in the future that, at least the advertisers are going to go in with some hesitation, and it's going to make it a much tougher sell for CBS, and I would not be surprised to see an hour show next year as opposed to the two-hour drag out, as you just mentioned.
Interesting. Yeah, there may be some make goods on that. I don't know that any of us know enough about the advertising industry specifically to know if that would be the case, just based on what's been public knowledge thus far. Steve, do you have any kind of sense about that one way or another? It was something where there was a lot of drudgery to get through it. They were padding the one bracket to, they'd go to commercial, and then, of course, it would be analysis in the next bracket or an interview with a coach in the next segment, I should say, before they get to the next bracket. And, again, people were kind of pooping on it on Twitter, deservedly so, and it seemed to be unanimous. But until such time as the network starts to lose money, I'm not so sure that they're going to take note of it. But do you have any early sense of how it's going to shake out going forward?
Well, I just think this is your quintessential case of greed begetting greed. I mean, you sit there and you wonder how much longer can it go, how much greedier can they be, and we found out this year. Look, 2 years isn't going to fly whether in the middle of it the brackets are leaked or not, but I do think there's kind of a contest, and maybe you and Nate would have a better sense than I, it's almost a contest with ESPN to try and keep the eyeballs on CBS for 2 hours as opposed to maybe 30 minutes and then, know, everybody's off to see bracketology on ESPN. I don't know what the numbers are, except most people do get their basketball information during the college basketball season on TV. They usually get it from ESPN, not CBS. That's the only thing I can think of. But the notion that you'd make the teams, let alone the fans, wait an extra 30 minutes, an hour, whatever, to find out because you want to break down the first bracket you've already announced, that's absurd. I do not think that'll happen again, no matter how long the show is next year.
Yeah, it really was incredibly cynical. And I just had the same kind of sense that everybody did watching it. And, again, just really kind of felt like it was endless. They did put out the number ones at the outset of it, so you could see how that was going. The number one seed overall, we're going to start in the South bracket. That is Kansas. And this is one where there is a strong sense, to the extent that there is something of a consensus this year, there's a lot of people that are saying Kansas to advance to the Final Four, a lot of people that are saying Michigan State, North Carolina, but you're tending to get Kansas out there from what I can see in sort of the preponderance, and it's probably just a plurality, of course. I'm sure there's nobody over 50% as far as what the public is thinking right now, but Steve, I'll start with you on this. When you look at this bracket, there are some potential landmines. I would think maybe more so on the bottom side of the bracket than on the top as far as Kansas getting forward. You have some tough teams down there in terms of Villanova, Miami, maybe Arizona if they finally get it all together, but you know, who knows if that's going to happen or not. What are your senses overall of looking at the bracket with Kansas and any of the teams that could get in their way?
Yeah, you know, people thought, look, I'm not a Bill Self guy, I'm not a Kansas guy, but people seem to think this was an incredibly tough bracket, and I don't view it to be as tough, certainly as another bracket that would have, you know, Michigan State and Virginia in it, for example. Before they drew the brackets, I had in my mind Michigan State and Virginia going to the Final Four. I know we'll talk about that later. But Kansas, to me, because I understand Villanova could have been a one, probably should be a two, but Villanova perennially, I hate to say it, I think Jay Wright's a good coach, but they usually are a three-point shooting team, and as you know, as you go through the brackets, six games, as you go through the tournament, it's going to be hard for them to shoot at a high level for six games. Don't think they're going to make it to even play Kansas. I do, however, have Kansas coming out of this bracket, but it's because I really couldn't find a team to beat. Cal has a chance, but I don't think they're quite there. I think Miami, who I'm going to pick, you know, I don't know if we're going to do all the games, but Miami, who I'm going to pick to beat Villanova in the Sweet 16, I think they have a chance. And if Villanova got there by shooting great for four games, maybe they'd have a chance. But I really don't think this bracket is as tough as it seems. For example, you know, Kansas is probably going to get, in my opinion, UConn in the second game. I understand that's an 8-9 game. And then they're going to get the winner of Cal and Maryland. As you know, Maryland hasn't been playing well at all. Melo Trimble, who looked like an All-America the first half of the year, has not been playing well. I think Cal can beat Maryland. So I don't see where that real challenge is going to be for Kansas. I'm sure you guys have a different opinion probably. But Villanova, I don't think they can beat Kansas. Miami, who I have beating Villanova, I don't think they can beat Kansas. And, in fact, the real question on the East Coast and down in Philly, where Temple is probably going to play Villanova in the second round, is can Fran Dunphy and Temple, you know, a Big Five school that plays Villanova every year and knows them well, can they pull off the upset? I don't think they can. Villanova beat them pretty easily during the regular season in those Big Five games in Philly. So I think Kansas has, frankly, a fairly clear path to the Final Four, even though I don't like them, and I certainly don't like them to win the championship.
I agree with your overview of the bracket for the most part. And, again, I'm glad you put out there, because I was going to ask you to follow up if you didn't, but you did. So you're saying Kansas over Maryland, Miami over Villanova, then Kansas over Miami. I like to get us out there with the Sweet 16, at least coming out of this for each of the brackets there. So thanks for sharing yours. I'm going to go with Kansas over Maryland. That's the only place I differ. You say Cal, I say Maryland. I'm saying Miami over Villanova, Kansas over Miami. So, Nate, you've got me and Steve in a lot of agreement there. You tend to be a contrarian a lot of times in a lot of ways. Are you with us for the most part here, or do you see things a little differently?
I do see things a little differently, Rick. One of the things I always look at when I look at this tournament is who's going to be in the NBA next year, who has lottery picks. Cal has two lottery picks, and a third guy's projected to go the first round. I still think Kansas will beat them, but I definitely think Cal will make the Sweet 16. So I have a Cal-Kansas with Kansas moving on. I also don't think that I don't think Villanova is going to be in the Elite Eight. And it's funny because Steve has Miami there. I think Arizona will beat Miami. Arizona will beat Villanova, and it'll be Kansas over Arizona to go on to the Final Four.
Ooh. Interesting. So you think Arizona's going to be able to get it all together here. That's been one of the big questions all season long. Actually, I want to ask you a follow-up because I'm sensing a little bit of a theme there. I will tell you, in terms of going through on this, I know that I have certainly been influenced by somebody who I do a lot of stuff here in, within the lounge, my good friend, FDH Lounge dignitary Kyle Ross. We do a lot of football and wrestling stuff, of course. His day job is handicapping. And the one thing that he said to me when we were doing a little bit of recording just yesterday is he doesn't like the Pac-12 this year. Obviously, you like them a little better than he does, Nate.
Well, I don't like them up top, and we'll talk about the Oregon bracket here in a little bit. But I just think with the lottery picks in Cal's team, I won't be shocked if they actually upset Kansas. I mean, anytime you've got these lottery picks in place, a guy hits fire in the tournament, and you can take one guy to carry you. They've got a couple of them. So, you know, Jaylen Brown's top five pick, most likely. That's why I like Cal to get by Maryland and to give Kansas a heck of a game. In terms of Arizona, I just think that whole bottom part of the bracket is filled with weakness. I could see Miami coming through, as Steve said, and, you know, Villanova, when's the last time? Villanova's had, what, one Final Four in the last 20 years? So,
right.
When you look at this bracket and when you talk about every year who's going to be there in the Final Four, it seems like three out of the four every single year have been there before. It's not coincidence that the same teams make the Final Four year after year after year. And, you know, in terms of track record, Arizona doesn't have the greatest one either, but slightly better than Villanova, and that's why I went with them to make the Final Four, to make the Final Eight. To lose to a Kansas team is just a little too strong for them at that point.
Steve, before we go to the next one, let me ask a follow-up with you. Your thoughts on the Pac-12 overall this year. Do you agree with Kyle Ross in terms of thinking that they're a little bit overrated top to bottom, or are you a little closer to where Nate's at?
I think I'm a little closer to where Nate is at because, to me, Arizona-Miami was a very tough call. I have seen Miami play more, frankly. Jim Larrañaga is the guy who had that incredible run, you know, 10 years ago with George Mason to the Final Four, which to me was really the beginning of what's happened in the last 10 years. That is, although Nate is right, these teams get to the Final Four over and over again. You do have these mid-majors, of which George Mason was the first, and Butler, of course, was the best example, who have now come to the fore because what we have is parity. So to me, Arizona-Miami is a tough call. I gave Miami a slight edge. I think Miller's a good coach, but I think Larrañaga is a great coach. You know, here's a guy who, again, took George Mason to the Final Four 10 years ago, and going way back to a New York City connection, Larrañaga played for Jack Curran, the legendary Malloy coach, Kenny Smith, all those guys. But he played for him back in the 60s, so he's been around, or 70s maybe. He's been around forever, and I think he's an excellent coach. And I think Miami is a pretty good team. But, yeah, I think that's going to be a very good game as well. But I'll still go with Miami, and we'll see where it shakes out.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's going to be a very tough game. I have Arizona and Miami playing, and I agree with you. I give the edge to Miami, but again, for Arizona, I think it's just a matter of putting all the pieces together, and the fact that they're only a sixth seed, it's indicative of the fact that it just hasn't happened as yet this year. One of their Pac-12 counterparts, Oregon, is the number one seed in the West, to the surprise of at least some people. This is a region, and I'll start with you, Nate, where a lot of people are looking at this saying that Oklahoma at number two has a pretty good path to the Final Four, not least of which because they have a number one seed that is not as heavily regarded. Again, if you're looking at traditional Final Four powers, Oregon comes up very short on that one there. I do have Oklahoma and Oregon in the regional finals myself, but I have some upsets along the way here to a mild degree on some of them. I have VCU over Oregon State. I'm going with the 5-12 cliche of Yale over Baylor. So as you're looking at it, Nate, what are some of the things that jump out at you as far as the West region, and how do you see it materializing?
Okay, there's one thing I really see as a major upset in this region, but as you said, I also have Yale. I think the game in Providence, Yale's going to have the crowd with them. And the Dukie fans that are going to have half the stadium filled are going to be rooting for Yale over Baylor as well. So I do have that 5-12 as at the Yale being the upset. I have Oregon dropping to Duke. I think that Duke's just a little too strong for them. I think it's a layup path, though, as you said, for Oklahoma. But what I really like to look at is what's going to happen in Oklahoma City. And when I break down games,
I always look at whose crowd is going to be there. And what you're going to have is you're going to have Wisconsin-Green Bay rolled through the Horizon Tournament. I mean, rolled through it. I have them beating A&M because half the people there, the way the game's set up in OKC, half the crowd's going to be Texas fans, half the crowd's going to be, you know, 40% A&M fans, the rest 10% Northern Iowa and Green Bay. I think the Texas fans get behind Green Bay. I think Green Bay upsets Texas. And then the very next, then that weekend, you're going to have the Oklahoma fans there. They hate Texas, and I think the Oklahoma fans are all going to pull for Green Bay. I think Wisconsin-Green Bay is going to be your Cinderella story to the Sweet 16 this year. I've got them playing Oklahoma, of course, getting stomped by Oklahoma, an Oklahoma-Duke matchup in the regional final, and Oklahoma onto the Final Four.
Interesting. Okay. So that, yeah, you are renowned more than anybody I know for looking at the intricacies of these things, of the crowds, of where teams are playing. And again, the Baylor-Yale thing kind of jumped out at me, too. I will somewhat facetiously kind of agree with you on the point of the Duke fans. They're rooting for Yale based on a shared elitism between them, I would say. But, yeah, that's a very possible thing. But as you're looking at it, Steve, how do you see this one shaking out? The West region is one of these ones, again, there's always a region every year where the pundits look at it afterwards and proclaim, oh, this is the weak bracket. This is the one where, you know, so-and-so's got a path to get straight through this thing based on how it's set up. A lot of times it's the number one seed they say it about. This year it seems to be the number two seed, Oklahoma. But how do you see it going?
Well, you guys are going to totally disagree with it after listening to your picks, but I have a totally different view of this bracket. I've only seen Oregon play a couple of times. They're very athletic. I don't think they're getting to the Final Four, but nor do I think Oklahoma is getting to the Final Four. To me, Oklahoma, again, another one of these perimeter teams. But based on what I just heard now, you've got me real nervous because not only do I have Texas A&M beating Green Bay and then beating Texas, crowd or no crowd, I then have Texas A&M beating Oklahoma, getting to the Elite Eight against Oregon, and beating Oregon to go to the Final Four, and here's why. I watched from start to finish, and it was a fascinating game, and maybe you're going to tell me on the other side I'll overrate Kentucky, even if you agree with me that they are undefeated, but I watched the whole Kentucky-Texas A&M game, and what a game, at what a level that game was played at. So Texas A&M gave them all they could handle. This Daniel House was unbelievable against Kentucky and has been good all season. You know, he had 32 and 6 rebounds against Kentucky, but he's averaging 16 a game and 5 rebounds for the game. They got another real good scorer in Jalen Jones, who's also, you know, 7 rebounds a game. Tyler Davis, double figure, 6 rebounds a game. They got 2 good guards in Caruso and Collins. They got a couple of guys who come off the bench who are really good players. They got a big guy who comes in, Troca Morelis, who averages 7.4 rebounds in 16 minutes a game. So maybe I'm swayed by one game because it certainly swayed me on Kentucky going forward, and we'll talk about that later. But it certainly swayed me on Texas A&M as well. And while I will agree that this bracket is not a strong bracket, I even want to go back earlier because I have to disagree with I think both of you picked Yale over Baylor. I think Baylor is a very athletic team. I think they really go up and down the floor. I think they're really good. And much as I'd like to see Yale, first time since 1962 they've been in the tournament, you guys all know that. I assume you know that their captain, Jack Montague, was expelled a couple months ago. So they're missing kind of their captain and leader. And I don't want to go off there, but it just came out in the papers today that he was expelled for a sexual assault. And he's now going to turn around and sue the school. So that was kept under wraps pretty well for, I'm going to say, about a month. He was expelled, I think they said, February 11th. And this is from something going back, apparently, I think, to 2014. So it was going through the process that they now have at these colleges for this thing. But I think that's a big blow to Yale, although to defend Yale, they played the last, I want to say, 6 games of the year without him. So I think not only is Baylor going to beat Yale, I think Baylor's going to beat Duke because Baylor is very athletic. Duke is not Duke this year to me. The kid Ingram is great. The Grayson guy can score. But I think Baylor's going to get to play Oregon, and then Oregon's going to beat them. So I have Oregon, Baylor, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma in the Sweet 16, and then Texas A&M beating Oregon to go to the Final Four.
Well, you can't get much more diametrically opposed in one direction. One guy says A&M out in the first round. One guy says A&M out in the Final Four. I'm kind of splitting the difference. I got them going down to Texas here in the round of 32. So my Final Four in the bracket is Oregon over Duke, Oklahoma over Texas. I'm going with a fair amount of chalk there, Oklahoma over Oregon in the regional final. As we turn our attention to the East, this is one where, again, a lot of people are looking at this. A lot of people are saying that with the way that North Carolina has kind of been on a roll recently, seems to have kind of solidified things after a rocky start, relatively speaking, that they could be the team to beat. A lot of people are saying also, too, could be Xavier's year for a breakthrough. And this is certainly as strong as they've ever looked at this point along the way. Those are the ones, it's not unusual for people to be pointing towards the one and the two seeds, but I do seem to be hearing a lot of that disproportionately as people are looking at the East. I'll start with you on this one, Steve. How do you see the East shaking out?
Yeah, I don't have North Carolina going to the Final Four, although they've been very impressive, and yes, they're playing better, and yes, they shut down Virginia. I mean, that was amazing to watch as well. So certainly they deserve all the accolades. I'm not a Roy Williams guy. Again, these guys have national championships, Bill Self at Kansas, Roy Williams, but I just don't buy into the whole Roy Williams program. So I will give you a minor upset in the first round. I like Providence. You know, if you haven't seen Chris Dunn play much, he might be the best point guard in the country. I think he's the best unknown point guard in the country, that's for sure. I think they're going to beat USC. But I do have North Carolina beating Providence. I think it's unfair to North Carolina and to Kentucky to have this be, and again, that's the, to me, underseeding of Kentucky at four. And just as an example, they beat Texas A&M in an unbelievable game to win their championship. Texas A&M is a three, Kentucky is a four. If you heard Calipari complaining, as he always does, on national TV after he got a four, I think he has a good point. When you point to the Kentucky losses earlier in the year that the committee chairman or president, whoever they interviewed later, he's right. But Kentucky, to me, is a different Kentucky team, obviously not as talented as they've been. But they've really grown during the season, and I don't know if you guys will agree with this or not, but Tyler Ulis as a sophomore makes him like a senior in the Kentucky program because they hardly have any of them. Except this year, Alex Poitras is a senior. So they have a four-year guy. They're not starting four freshmen and a sophomore as they usually do. Ulis and Jamal Murray, who is a freshman, you know, they might be the best backcourt in the country. We can argue about that, but they're certainly in the top two or three. So I have Kentucky upsetting North Carolina, and I also have West Virginia upsetting Xavier. I do want to go back to a play-in game. I know we don't have a lot of time, but I just want to tell you this quick story. Michigan playing Tulsa in the playoff game. My daughter's a senior at a Division III school, Williams, up in Massachusetts, and I go visit her every year, and we go to a game, a basketball game there, because, you know, D3 basketball, they have a good D3 team. And I remember going into the gym 2 years ago and watching this kid warm up. He's about 6'7". He hit like 20 jumpers in a row beyond the three-point line. I'm like, who is this guy? And it turns out, of course, that he's Duncan Robinson, who leaves Williams after getting beaten the D3 championship game 2 years ago, still has to sit out a year, which I didn't even know those were the rules, has to sit out a year to transfer to D1. Now he's a redshirt sophomore at Michigan, and just ask any, you know, Jay Billis, any basketball purist, this guy is one of the best shooters in the country. Now, I watched him in his last game. He's not very athletic, but, you know, we can have this debate another time. I think in the new NBA, and the new NBA is, let's get some standalone shooters to play with LeBron James, for example. They got Channing Frye. This kid, who is 6'8", not fleet of foot, well, just watch him shoot. If you can watch the play-in game, or I think they're going to beat Tulsa, so I think they will play another game. But just watch that kid against Notre Dame. I even think Michigan can beat Notre Dame because they're a decent squad. Beilein's a great coach. So I have Kentucky and West Virginia, and then I have Kentucky going to the Final Four. And maybe you'll both tell me I've overrated this Kentucky-Texas A&M thing, but I do think the arrow is pointing up for Kentucky, as it usually does at the end of the year. If this kid, Labissiere, the big kid who is a freshman, if he plays like a big man, I think they can really go to the Final Four.
Before I go to Nate, because there's going to be a lot for him to unpack there, and by the way, with Poitras, at Kentucky, with everything that he has bridged in his multiple years there and with the injuries, you know, it's been longer than just the 4 years. It's almost like being a Raider and bridging Blanda to Derek Carr, isn't it? I mean, that's how long it seems like he's been there. Multiple eras of UK basketball under John Calipari. But what do you have for the bottom of the bracket? Just curious. Who do you have Kentucky beating in the regional final again, and how do they get there in terms of the Elite Eight game?
I have Kentucky beating Stony Brook. You want to watch this kid, Jamal Mornay, had 43 against Vermont. You know, I feel bad for Stony Brook. They got beat in the finals the last two games, the last
sure.
2 years.
But
now
who does, Kentucky beat? Sure. Who do they beat in the Elite Eight, though? And then how does the Elite Eight, what are the two teams setting up to play Kentucky? How does that shake out?
I have Kentucky beating Indiana second round, Kentucky beating North Carolina, and West Virginia beating Xavier to set up a Kentucky-West Virginia, and then Kentucky going to the Final Four.
Oh, okay. Okay, very, very
interesting.
I'm not
an Xavier guy either. I'm sorry.
In terms of looking at this, my bracket on this side is a little bit more exotic than that. I have some upsets. Nate, it'll be interesting to see if any coincide with you. I have another 5-12 here. I have Chattanooga over Indiana. I have a fairly big one on paper that I know Steve does not agree with. I have Stephen F. Austin over West Virginia. So a 3-14 one is pretty adventurous. I think most would agree. But how do you see it shaking out, Nate? I know you've had some thoughts on Kentucky that you've expressed to me.
Steve stole my notes from this region. With carbon copy. It's unbelievable. First of all, Indiana is the most underseeded team in the history of this tournament. They're ranked 10th by the coaches. They're ranked 10th by the AP. They're on the 5 line opposite Kentucky. That's insane. I don't know. The committee decided to screw Calipari, and Indiana was the scapegoat. It's insane. But, and Steve said it, Chris Dunn is the best point guard in the country. Not might be, definitely is, going to be a lottery pick, going to be top five. North Carolina better watch out. I still have North Carolina beating Providence, but that's going to be tough. I have Kentucky beating Indiana, Kentucky beating North Carolina. Just like Steve had, I have West Virginia, Xavier regional final. I think Notre Dame and Wisconsin both win their games. I have West Virginia over Xavier. And then the Bob Huggins-Kentucky matchup, I have Kentucky on to the Final Four. So
this is another one where I have Kentucky going out early. Or I'm sorry, West Virginia going out early, and you have West Virginia going deep. So this is another point of great disagreement here. My bracket has got a decent amount of chalk the further that you get into it. I have North Carolina over Kentucky to set up North Carolina getting to the Elite Eight. On the bottom part of it, I have Xavier over Notre Dame. And I have Xavier over North Carolina. So I have a point of disagreement with you guys on this bracket. I have Xavier advancing to the Final Four. Let's go to the Midwest. Let's take a look down there. This is another one where people looked at it and felt like, in a lot of ways, there's a little bit of a vulnerable number one seed with Virginia here. And, again, the team that seems to be getting a lot more critical praise than them is Michigan State. And I kind of tend to agree with that. I kind of tend to like Michigan State better as a team than Virginia right about now. Although this is one of these things, I can be a little bit warped in perception. I go back to a game in December where Michigan State almost lost to a team in their own backyard, Oakland, where they really didn't look very good in that game. One game doesn't tell you all you need to know, obviously. But I have a lot of respect for Michigan State. Spoiler alert, I'm going to pick them to go on to do some great things when we get to that point of talking about it. But I'll start with you on this one, Nate. How do you see the Midwest playing out?
I like Sparty just like you do, Rick. I definitely think that when we look at this, I've got Butler winning the first round game and then losing to Virginia. I think that Purdue's going to come out, win a couple games. And I think Purdue can play with Virginia. Purdue's got a four-year senior there as well. He's been there a while, Hammond, and projected to be an NBA first rounder. And I think that it's going to be a Big Ten regional final. I have Michigan State Purdue in the regional final. I have Gonzaga knocking off Seton Hall in an upset, but then Utah being able to hold on against them. Sparty rolling past Dayton, Sparty rolling past Utah, and Sparty in a Big Ten rematch rolling past Purdue to go on to the Final Four.
Interesting. Okay. I've got Michigan State getting past Seton Hall to reach the Elite Eight on the top part of the bracket, Virginia getting past Purdue. So I've got a 1-2 matchup there. I, too, like Sparty to make it to the Final Four. Steve, how do you see it going?
Yeah, more similar to you, Rick, but I do want to give you my one 4-13 upset. I watched Iona last week play Monmouth. I don't know if we're going to get into snubs. Monmouth, you know, bench antics aside, I don't know why that became a national story, but they had a little 5'8 kid, Justin Robinson, who was unbelievable, and now you won't get a chance to see him unless you watch him in the NIT, where you can't see Ben Simmons, but that's another story. But I do have Iona with this A.J. English. He's unbelievable. I have them upsetting Iowa State in the first round. Other than that, I have a similar – well, I have Virginia and Purdue up on the top, but I've got Virginia beating Purdue, although I totally agree with analysis. I watched Purdue play last week. You know, they start 6'8", 6'9", 7 feet, and then they bring this Isaac Haas off the bench. He's 7'2", so I think Purdue can beat Virginia. I just think Virginia has a little more. The problem for Virginia to me is they're in the wrong bracket. If they were in – the South, I think I'd pick them to go to the Final Four. If they were in the West, I think I'd pick them to go to the Final Four. Again, in my head, I had Michigan State and Virginia as Final Four teams, except they're in the same bracket now. I do have, however, Seton Hall going two games. Seton Hall was unbelievable in the tournament this year. They're a good team. Isaiah Whitehead is unbelievable. I have them beating Gonzaga and beating Utah. I also have Syracuse. I'm not sure they should have been in the tournament. It's interesting. Boeheim missed the first nine games. They were terrible. Hopkins, his former player and top assistant, was the coach. And they certainly had some good wins when Boeheim came back. Maybe he gets in on reputation. But I have Syracuse beating Dayton, but then, of course, losing to Michigan State. So I have Virginia beating Purdue, although I agree that's a close one, and Purdue must be the biggest team in the country. And then I have Michigan State beating Seton Hall, and, of course, I've got Michigan State going to the Final Four. I'm a huge Tom Izzo fan. You guys probably know the stat in the last 20 years. Izzo's been to 7 Final Fours, and the guys tied for second are named Patino and Krzyzewski, and they've got 5.
Absolutely. That is amazing. So your Final Four in the Midwest is the same as mine. Those are the same teams that
yeah.
I have making it to that point. And I agree with you on Syracuse. That is a rule of thumb that I have come to adopt over the years. Always take the undeserving team that shouldn't be there. They invariably win that first game. I don't know why it is, but they always win that one. I was tempted to go with you on the 4-13. What I found persuasive in the end was that this more or less happened to Iowa State last year, when I had them as a Final Four team, no less. And it's can lightning strike twice? If anybody's going to have their guard up this year, it would be Iowa State. So, but, yeah, that very well could happen, certainly on paper. So as we look at this here, off the top of my head, we have at least some of the same Final Four teams, all of us. I have Kansas over Oklahoma in one regional semifinal. I have Michigan State over Xavier, and I have Kansas over Michigan State in the final. Let's start with you, Nate. How do you have it?
I have Kansas over Oklahoma, Sparty over Kentucky in a heck of a game, and Sparty winning the national championship, cutting down the nets over Kansas. I'm not a Bill Self guy either. It's just that, you know, they had Oklahoma's number. That was a heck of a game earlier this season. And, you know, I won't be surprised to see Oklahoma in the finals against Sparty. And I won't be surprised to see any of those four teams win a title. They're all four within the group of teams that could win it. But I do have, at the end of the day, Sparty cutting down the nets. Too many guys have been there too long. A couple lottery picks on the team. You've got the Izzo factor. Sparty, Kansas, I'll pick Tom Izzo over Bill Self any day of the week. And so that's what I'm going with. But would not be surprised to see it be, you know, Oklahoma, Kentucky, all those four teams. You know, it's almost a coin flip of which four to pick, but at the end of the day, it's Sparty over Kansas for the championship.
Well, I know that none of us are very, very big Bill Self guys from the sound of it. It's one of these things, as I look at it, Steve, where it almost feels like, for as much talent as they have year in and year out, that they're almost kind of due for how long they've been. And I also saw another stat that said that the number one overall seed has really kind of rarely won in the last decade or so. So it almost seems like it could be a little bit of regression to the mean on that. We're almost due to have a number one overall seed win it again. So that accounts for it, at least partially in my book. What's your Final Four look like?
Well, my Final Four, obviously, Kansas, Texas A&M, Michigan State, and Kentucky. I have Michigan State beating Kentucky in what I think will be the game of the tournament. If Kentucky advances forward, as I've seen them advance forward, at least in the last couple of weeks, and that's what happens with a Kentucky team. Since I'm not a Bill Self guy, I'm going with Billy Kennedy and Texas A&M over Bill Self in Kansas in the Final Four, and then I think it's going to be a little easier final for Michigan State over Texas A&M. Michigan State cuts down the nets. I understand what you're saying about Kansas, and but when you look at Kansas, it's like looking at Peyton Manning for me until this year, and that is, how could the guy only win one Super Bowl? How could Bill Self only win one national championship when he's in the mix every year? You'd think by accident they would have won two. So I don't like Kansas. I kind of agree. Nate and I agree totally on that. But I do have Texas A&M, and I know that's a shocker, at least on this panel, going all the way to the final game, and then Michigan State gets it all with Tom Izzo.
They've got the talent to do that, definitely. For a year that's as wide open as this, you can't rule out A&M, and I know that none of us are ruling them out on talent, but basically looking at it in terms of circumstance. And you're right about Peyton Manning. I mean, Peyton Manning, when you look at his career, he won as many titles as Trent Dilfer as he did as Peyton Manning, one and one. So that is kind of a weird thing, you know. That's
People won't remember that 30 years from now, because Peyton Manning did win his second, but people won't remember that he wasn't even Peyton Manning. But obviously I agree. And as you know, Rick, my son's the biggest New York Patriot fan in the history of the world. So I've had to watch every game the Patriots have played since before they won their first Super Bowl. So I don't think there's a conversation there. I guess that's for another one. But I don't see how Bill Self has all this talent and can't win more than one. And hey, maybe, you know, in a few weeks, maybe he'll have two also. You never know.
Maybe so. I know that we probably need to take it around the table here and just see whatever thoughts you guys have that we didn't get to. I'll start with you, Nate. Anything else that's on your mind that we didn't cover with this tournament?
It's just crazy. And you look at how two brackets can be totally opposite. Steve and I agree on 90% of this. And I remember when O.J. Mayo, you remember this, when he was playing Beasley in the first round, and I'm like, wow, O.J.
Yep.
Mayo to the Final Four, and they got beat in the first round. Same thing with this A&M Green Bay game, right? I mean, if Green Bay wins that game, Steve's tournament is done. But, you know, if they don't win that game, absolutely they can go on to the Final Four. I agree with him completely. It's just that coin flip, and it'd be a huge upset. But it is crazy how two people can have brackets that are almost identical, but have one big decision they make that's different, and the ripple effect that comes from that. And that's where we're at with this debate. But so we have, what, two Sparties and a Kansas for a championship? You say it's Kansas. Is that correct? We all have Sparty in the finals?
Yeah. We all have Sparty in the finals here, yeah. And I have Kansas in the championship game. And so actually you and I agree on the championship matchup, Nate. We just disagree on the outcome. Steve's is a little bit different. I will tell you this, Nate. I guarantee Steve is going to be watching that 3:14 A&M game in the first round with a lot more trepidation after hearing you. No question about it.
Well, especially now, Rick, that's exactly right. I will say, when Nate was going through the East bracket saying how it was identical, I was thinking to myself, oh, maybe I should say great minds think alike. But then we had just finished the West and you couldn't have two more different brackets. So I guess, but he's
right.
That is the ripple effect. And again, we'll see whether my view of this Kentucky-Texas A&M game, which was an unbelievable battle and at least arguably, I'll say one of the five best college games of the year. I don't want to say what was first, what was second, but was a tremendous basketball game, and I think they're both going to grow out of that game. But you're right. I don't think I would have paid as much attention to Texas A&M Green Bay as I will now, that's for sure.
You just wait to hear all those Texas fans in the background pulling for Green Bay. It's going to be a road game for A&M.
I understand.
That's one of the things, like I said, I know Nate studies that from year to year, is the effect of being in those arenas and what's the spillover effect from some of the other games likely to be in terms of how they're populated, where the territory is. To a lesser extent, where I disagree with both you guys on something that would be big ripple effects, I've got Stephen F. Austin beating West Virginia, and both of you guys, I believe, have West Virginia winning more than one game. So that is something where, again... Yeah. So that's probably the second biggest point of difference that any of us have with one another, is me going for the 3:14 upset there in the East. With you, Steve, any other points in looking at this that we didn't hit?
Well, yeah, just on that one, no, for me, I mean, Huggins is an old-time lunatic screamer yeller, but I still think he's an excellent coach. Wherever he's been, he's done well. And they're just going to press. I mean, I think they're I don't want to say they're like Nolan Richardson's Arkansas team, but they really will pick you up full court and press you. And I just wrote one thing that you'll be interested in, Rick. They have eight guys. West Virginia has eight guys who play more than 18 minutes a game. They have nine guys who play 14 or more minutes a game. So you know what you're getting. It might be 40 minutes of hell. I'm not sure. But I just think West Virginia is going to smother not only Stephen F. Austin, but a few other people to get to the Elite Eight, and then I think they'll have their trouble with Kentucky.
We'll see how it plays out. The one thing that, again, it didn't take it may take Nostradamus to fill out the bracket completely in an accurate fashion here, 63 for 63, of course, not counting the first round in this, the first four, or whatever they want to call it. But it never takes Nostradamus to predict that it is going to be an excellent preview segment with you guys going through the NCAA hoops tournament. I am careful not to speak any words involving the words March and Madness together, lest I get sued. The NCAA hoops tournament preview, ladies and gentlemen. You knew that it was going to be awesome with these two guys, and of course, they did what they always do. They backed up my assertion, as would be the case always. So, Nate, thank you so much, and Steve, thank you very much as well. This was awesome. I will certainly look for other opportunities to pair you guys together in the future here. We've done this for this tournament before, but we'll have to look for other opportunities as we go ahead. But thank you both so much for being on.
Great to be with
Thanks
you.
Thanks again, Rick. Thanks again, Rick. Great
Excellent.
To
Thanks,
you.
Guys. And, really appreciate it. Great stuff. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FBH Lounge mini episode number 707.